Second Life is not a game. It is a multi-user virtual environment. It doesn't have points or scores. It doesn't have winners or losers.
Oh, it has losers.
Welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave. This is going to be the fourth meeting of the VOK Book Club. Today we'll be discussing Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, which was published in 2011 by Crown. Just want to introduce everybody. My name is Greg. I'm Claudius the Fool on the forums, and I'm joined by, I believe, five other vassals today. If you guys just want to go in first name alphabetical order, just keep it simple. Or not.
Not so simple.
Does not compute.
Isn't there an Alex? No?
Is there? I don't. Let us
believe. No.
This is Alex, known as Lucky Charms on the forums.
Okay, this is Brett, White Raven on the forums.
This is Duncan, or Valkyros on the forums.
This is Paul, known as Pod's Plate in the Oasis.
And this is Zach, also known as Alias in the forums, or the Oasis, I guess. That'd be a terrible name.
So we're actually all meeting in the private chat room that I created, and you can only get here with an invite, so no one else can come, but I'm glad you guys are here, hanging out in... I don't know, I was trying to think, like, what from the book I would hang out in, but I'm not that nostalgic about the 80s, but...
Well, I mean, the book, the guy likes the 80s a lot, but I'm guessing, in their Oasis world, there'd be plenty of 90s stuff and 2000s stuff.
Yeah.
So we just wouldn't be with them.
No, we'd be in our own planet, but that's all right. But if you guys want, I can read the summary of the book first. That's why you can think about your avatars. It'll give you an extra minute.
Do it.
All right. All right, just a brief summary of the book we're discussing. This is just from the jacket copy. It's the year 2044, and the real world is an ugly place. Like most of humanity, Wade Watts escapes his grim surroundings by spending his waking hours jacked into the Oasis, a sprawling virtual utopia that lets you be anything you want to be, a place where you can live and play and fall in love on any of 10,000 planets. And like most of humanity, Wade dreams of being the one to discover the ultimate lottery ticket that lies concealed within this virtual world. For somewhere inside the giant network playground, the Oasis, creator James Halliday has hidden a series of fiendish puzzles that will yield massive fortune and remarkable power to whoever can unlock them. For years, millions have struggled fruitlessly to attain this prize, knowing only that Halliday's riddles are based in the pop culture he loved, that of the late 20th century. And for years, millions have found in this quest another means of escape, retreating into happy, obsessive study of Halliday's icons. Like many of his contemporaries, Wade is as comfortable debating the finer points of John Hughes' oeuvre, playing Pac-Man or reciting Devo lyrics, as he is scrounging power to run his Oasis rig. And then Wade stumbles upon the first puzzle. Suddenly, the whole world is watching, and thousands of competitors join the hunt, among them certain powerful players who are willing to commit very real murder to beat Wade to his prize. Now the only way for Wade to survive and preserve everything he knows is to win, but to do so he may have to leave behind his oh-so-perfect virtual existence and face up to life and love in the real world he's always been so desperate to escape. There we go. That's some good jacket copy. So that's the world we'll be diving into today. Yeah, just everybody wants to just go around, do your lemon cake or Easter egg rating, and also describe your Oasis avatar at the same time, and any particular items that you would like to have in your inventory, starting with Alex.
Oh.
No pressure.
Oh, dear. I think when I first completed the novel, I was thinking like a 2.5, but I've been continuously oscillating between that and a 3, so somewhere in that range. My Oasis avatar... You're not allowed to have horses, are you? There's no horses.
Sure, you can have horses if you want.
You could be a centaur.
You want to be a stud?
No, not a horse, but a Byzantine cavalry officer, a cataphractoi.
Ooh.
That's what I would look like. Greg's probably going to be a Praetorian guardsman.
Oh, did you ruin it for me? who was next? Duncan?
Brett?
Sorry, I didn't want
to say. No, Duncan.
We're sticking to the alphabet here.
Still thinking.
Oh, I'd probably be a cooler version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as having something in my inventory, I don't know, probably one of those sex dolls.
Just in case.
You don't need the sex dolls in the Oasis. In the Oasis, you can have sex with anybody. Those are for the real world.
Oh, that's right. You need the sex doll outside.
They're for simulating the experience.
Right, right. Well, I have a hard time believing a teenage kid would get rid of that, but... All right.
It helped
well,
him through his breakup.
You didn't rank it the book.
Oh, I was supposed to rank the book. How about a 3.5? I like it, but I'm not like crazy about it. As far as recommendations go, it depend on the person I'm talking to.
That sounds fair.
Yeah, I liked the book. I didn't love it. I felt the story and the characters were kind of run-of-the-mill overall. You know, Wade didn't really leave a big impression on me. He was just kind of an every geek. But I definitely enjoyed the plot. The puzzles and the action sequences were really exciting. And as a fan of video games, I liked how it sort of took on the iconography of levels and power-ups and boss fights. And I also thought the way geek culture was depicted was pretty interesting, because on one hand, the Oasis is kind of the celebration of sci-fi and fantasy, but on the other hand, it sort of makes the characters' enjoyment of this, some of these things kind of really superficial and sad at times. So I'm not quite sure what Klein was trying to say overall, but yeah, I enjoyed myself, so I'll give it 3.5 Easter eggs. And I had to think about what I was going to pick as my avatar. I think I'm going to go with Dark Link from the Legend of Zelda series. And he's like regular Link, but he has red eyes, a black cloak.
But
he can multiply
dark.
Himself. And he can hide inside reflective surfaces, which is cool.
So do you play Dark Link in Super Smash?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, all right, just checking.
he doesn't have extra powers, though, but he does in the games. But I would keep Link's artillery, including the Ocarina of Time, which you can use to time travel. But I would also add Mithril under my tunic from the Hobbit.
Oh, look at you.
Are there any items you wouldn't keep of Link's arsenal?
I thought way too much about this.
Couldn't possibly.
Would you keep like the boomerang and stuff and the hookshot and things?
Yeah, I'd keep all of it. You never know when you get the rank.
Yeah, big inventory.
Paul?
Yeah, I would rate the book 4.04 as in an HTTP 404 not found error message, in that I liked the book and could relate to a lot of it, because I was clearly connecting to the author's server, but it just wasn't quite finding what I was looking for. So it's still a very good book, and I enjoyed it as a lighthearted read and a fun game, but it lacked a little bit of the depth and complexity I might have been looking for otherwise.
Sorry, that was the best.
Well done.
You're a better podcaster than me.
I might as well prepare for these sort of things.
Oh my god.
And my avatar would look like Sean Connery in Zardoz.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen the movie, but it's from 74, and it's got, he's in this like red kind of loincloth.
How do you look in a red diaper, Paul?
Very good, with like thigh high leather boots and like cross and red bandoliers and a handgun with his braided ponytail and handlebar mustache. It's a badass look. And I was either considering that, or I would go as an infant, as just a small baby that would freak people out.
Yes.
Please go with the baby.
Maybe a baby.
A
Sean
baby
Connery.
With a handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
Like the baby from Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. And for inventory items, I don't know, maybe like Batman's utility belt. So that'd be like some diverse things. I'd like the magic carpet from Aladdin for transportation and flying. How about like Captain Planet rings with all the powers of Earth, Wind, and Fire? And I guess I need a sword, so I'd take Dawn from Song of Ice and Fire. Nice meteorite magic sword. And I probably have some guns and stuff too, but those aren't as exciting.
All right. I'm kind of with everyone else on this. I enjoyed the book, and I thought it was really fun. Obviously, I'm a huge nerd, so the references really worked for me. I was enjoying every single one of them and just getting into that aspect and how fun it was. And it was just a cool experience. But at the same time, I think the book suffered a lot from issues with tension and character and pacing a lot. And I was kind of disappointed, because I loved the premise. And I think that there was some missed opportunities to kind of milk it for all it was worth, and I was sad about that. But still, like I say, I really enjoyed the book. I thought I had a really fun time. I couldn't really put it down, and I burned through it pretty fast. So for that reason, I'd give it like 3.5 to 4 Easter eggs. I thought it was a fine book, just it has its problems, which we'll get into for sure. As for the avatar, I think I'm going to go with the boring option. Like Brad, I'd be just like an upgraded version of me, but I'd probably be wearing like Jedi robes of some description, and like I'd use an inventory. I would have a lightsaber and an E-11 carbine, because guns may be uncivilized, but they get the job done. So I'd mix it up with that. Maybe some Mandalorian armor too. A mix of that to get everything in there. But yeah.
Would you be a consular or a sentinel?
Oh god, I'd go with sentinel. I like the double blade option, right. And I like the melee combat as opposed to the heavy emphasis on the force powers. So,
but Wade did note that lightsabers were kind of passe since everybody.
Yeah,
that was a lovely aside.
That's true. I'd have to
like 100 lightsabers in his collection.
I'd have to do
but
something to distinguish myself. They were there, and he had an X-wing too. So there's something to be said for it. Yeah, I'd have to do something to distinguish myself from the masses. It is definitely a kind of vanilla choice, but yeah, that's probably what would satisfy me.
You could have the cross hilt from the new trailer for the new one.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Funny with
the This is the future. They've already seen that. They already have those.
That's true.
So there's no mention of a third Star Wars trilogy in the book.
Yeah, you mentioned like six other Indiana Jones movies, but no Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the funniest things. Like, everything after the Crystal Skull is terrible.
Right. yeah, I read it when it first came out. I read it and I listened to the audiobook, and it was just such a super fun, you know, I was like, oh, this is the best book. I had so much fun, and then I kind of forgot about it. And then on a reread, I kind of like paid more attention to it critically because you're reading it for a book club. I'd give it like a solid four. I really enjoyed it. It did have its drawbacks, but I feel like the little things that I super appreciated made up for the other holes in the story, if that makes sense. And the whole fact that he ended it with the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, like that was the perfect ending for me because it just reminded me of literally like quoting that with my friends, and that is one probably my top five favorite movies of all time. And it was, you know, when I turned the page and started describing where he was and the castle and the coconuts, I was like, I just got super nostalgic about that, which is the goal of the book. But yeah, I mean, Wade is a very, I don't even know if he's considered three-dimensional. He's pretty much two-dimensional, and the crew he puts together is, you know, it's no one really goes through a big transformation, you know, at any point. The Sixers are bad.
Like, one becomes a girl.
Except, well, that was a girl the whole time.
Yeah, I know. he didn't know, though.
Yeah, but I did love it, and I just, Will Wheaton also narrates the audiobook, and he's, you know, he shows up as a character, or he's referenced as a character in the book, which was a little meta level, but it was just a really good production, and it's a great book. For some reason, like, there's this resurgence in popular sci-fi, where, like, literary reviews are latching onto sci-fi books, and I feel like this might have been the wrong book to hold up as the new golden age of science fiction. I don't think it's that. It, you know, I think, like, that's something like Station Eleven, which we discussed, but it was a good book. It wasn't great, but I give it a solid four. And for my Avatar, I was debating between just going as like Mad Max or like a Imperial Roman, not a Praetorian, but just an Imperial soldier, but with like a Valyrian gladius, you know, because that can happen in the Oasis. And I'd also want Roland's guns from the Dark Tower in my inventory, and a crash helmet from Saga, which is like you can transport anywhere in the universe with this special helmet.
I don't think you can get that though, because teleporting isn't a free thing.
Yeah, but I could kill a bad guy, and maybe it would be like an artifact that
a special.
Not everybody can have a crash helmet.
No, Greg, would this be a early Imperial, like Centurion, or a late Empire comitatensis?
Before the Severan, you know, before they did all those changes, like Augustine.
Okay.
Soldier. But I wouldn't
think
the
movie is this from?
Oh, it's a really good movie called History. Sorry. But I wouldn't take the Pelum because, you know, with guns you don't need the range weapons. Join us next time on the Ancient Medieval Warfare podcast with me and Alex.
Do it. I'd listen.
It would just be Alex correcting me, I think. So let's try to have a spoiler-free, just overall, you know, in discussion just off the bat for people who are on the fence about it or in the process of reading it. Did you want to just go around, just give your overall impressions, or if you had any specific point that you wanted to bring up without being too super spoilery? I just wanted to say, like, it's a quest story, and with any quest story, there's expectations, and this basically fills your expectations. But it's also more about the journey than the destination, which I think quest stories, that's a big part of it also.
Okay. Right at the beginning, he says he won, so...
Yeah, so
that's right. The framework
like the first chapter.
Yeah. So basically the framework of the story, which I kind of forgot until I was going back and rereading it, that it's written sort of after the fact. Everything has happened, and he's sort of telling the people of 2045, like, how his story, but he's really, it's Ernest Cline telling us, because he wouldn't need to tell them all the little things going on in the Oasis, because everybody would know already.
Right.
Which is one kind of complaint that the story gets, that it's way too descriptive and too many references explained, but I don't think it's that bad.
I would just say that in terms of recommending who would enjoy this book, I think that anyone could enjoy it, but you're definitely going to get more out of it if you're kind of like into a lot of geek pop culture stuff. I think that honestly is a huge part of the appeal, kind of just getting all this in this really cool format. And besides that, like you say, it's a really cool sort of, I don't know, like adventure story. There's a love story in there too. General stuff that is, you know, fun to read. And yeah, I think anyone could enjoy this book. It would definitely be doing more for you if you kind of had that background of knowledge of various geeky things.
Yeah, I think if you're into the 80s, you'll get a lot out of it. But I mean, I sort of understood most of the references, but I feel like if it had been more 90s stuff, like 90s movies and video games, I would have been geeking out a bit more. Like if he was describing levels in Donkey Kong Country rather than Joust.
he is writing a sequel, that'll be the sequel.
I hope it is, because like, you know, if he was going through levels from like GoldenEye, Metal Gear Solid, I would be kind of into it because I know all the little secrets in those places.
Oh,
but
boy.
Here it's
I was
going to
take an RCP-90 for my inventory, but that gun, I wouldn't ever find ammo for it. So I don't know, unless it was like infinite. But that RCP-90 is burned into my brain as the best gun from any shooter game I ever played. Sorry.
Is
I'll Wade throw it in there also.
Is Wade still going to be the protagonist in the sequel?
He said it's a sequel, so it's going to follow probably someone that we know. I would hope it's not Wade.
This is the group of people that like the 90s, and this is the 90s Easter egg hunt.
It's going to focus on Irock as the outsider that was left.
Yeah, oh, dear Irock. Lord.
Oh, Irock's been disappeared.
Up. What does he say? Check this out, girls.
No, that's what I said. Yeah, also just the fact that it also works on a dystopian level, because it is the real world that it's set in is 50 years in the future where, you know, we basically run out of oil. Most of the everyday people have run out of oil. It's only for like the super rich, and it feels like the world is a much better, it's a much worse place than we hope we're going to be in 50 years, where the economy's completely crashed. It seems like we've been in a great, they call it the great, they have a term, it's not the Great Depression, it's like the great decade of depression, or it seems like it's been going on for many years, and people are just living in this virtual world because it's much better than the real one.
And he introduces like some cool elements with that part, with like the stacks of mobile homes on top of each other. That's just like a really cool image. I just wish it had gotten more exploration, but I think that at least that's kind of tonally consistent with the book, and that it's about sort of escaping from that harsh reality that they live in, and it kind of, even the narrative doesn't take time to.
Right, when I first read that, I kind of took me as like, would that really happen? Would they stack mobile homes? But the way he gets to where the, you know, people were going to the cities and they basically ran out of gas around the city, so they were all there anyway. Like, it makes kind of sense, but it just didn't seem like that would be, you know, I feel like people, the first thing they wouldn't do would be like, let's stack our cars.
Yeah, like again, there's a plenty of suspension of disbelief that you have to apply to this book. I don't think it was intending to be the most realistic, gritty kind of look at post-apocalypse, but it's fun.
In a way, I almost feel like, as I mentioned in my rating, as much as it celebrates geek culture, it's almost condemning geek culture as this kind of perpetual nostalgia and distraction and escapism that ultimately, you know, helps lead to the destruction of the world, because we're so obsessed with our little virtual worlds that we just let our own real world sort of crumble around us. We become disconnected from each other.
I think it happened the other way around, though. I think the world started to crumble and then the virtual world popped up because it was better.
Well, I'm sure it fed off each other because, you know, internet's been around for long before the world.
Well, this is better than my internet.
and I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I just... Like, what's the guy's name? Morrow. I feel like he's just totally complacent, even though he disliked the... Well, yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe it's a bit of a spoiler. I'm sorry. I can say
we can get to him. But we can just talk about a couple of the characters. You know, basically you have James Halliday, who was the, you know, I don't know if he's like Steve Jobs combined with a Mark Zuckerberg. You know, he's basically created this virtual reality. That everyone lives in, and it's not just virtual. It's the internet. People go to school there. You know, some people basically never leave. You know, you just check out to go to the bathroom and to eat something and just live their lives inside there. But he's, you know, wasn't a happy man. He was reclusive, and no one knew what happened to him for 15 years. And when he died, he basically had this contest for, you know, whoever gets the three answers gets the a controlling share in his company. And that's basically the jumping off point of the book.
Greg lied. You don't have to leave to go to the bathroom. You can stay right in.
Oh yeah, that's right. If you have certain rigs are better. Yeah.
It is almost like the 5-year mark before the Matrix, where you're just jacked in permanently and you're just fed through tubes and discrete waste through tubes, and you don't even know you're in a virtual world.
Which I feel like a lot of these people would prefer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a voluntary kind of virtual imprisonment.
They don't want to unplug.
They could just be the batteries in the Matrix and their little pods of goo.
And the sick and. And the Sixers eventually just, use human, like, organic material to power their company.
They're already kind of leeching off everybody's computer to power the Oasis.
Yeah, because that was one of the problems they explained, that how could they possibly have the processing power, but that's what they do, which I'm not that technical to understand if that's,
yeah,
would that
know.
Work on that scale, or like if everybody just turned off, the Oasis would just go away. One of my complaints is that he way over explains the technical stuff, like of the different types of computers, but I kind of wish I would have more explanation of the current, like the Oasis itself, not the old Commodore that he was playing on in that virtual, you know, reality.
Yeah, I just kind of vaguely echo what Duncan was saying earlier about it being kind of weird to suss out what the theme and sort of message was about the book, or whether or not it supports the notion of committing to a virtual world and living in that sphere. Like, it was kind of hard to tell what the author was trying to commit to, because there is kind of like a wavering between thinking that the virtual world is damaging and ultimately a harmful thing to be a part of, and the other kind of celebrating it. So, and I, you know, I don't know if that sort of wavering is necessarily wrong. And I think that it might be consistent with how people feel about it in real life and sort of the ways that like social media and stuff are used. But yeah, it was kind of, there was no clear sort of like definitive answer of what the right answer is in terms of the virtual business.
Well, I think it's like, and, play video games, but go outside, you know, take a break. That's kind of the message, the theme of the book.
Mm-hmm. Klein is definitely aware of the destructive capabilities of this kind of lifestyle. And there's a few passages, one we can sort of get to later, which is like one of the most depressing sort of sequences in the whole book.
And I don't think the author is required to make a ruling one way or the other on this is a good or a bad thing, but more just presented as a state of affairs, a part of life that people are dealing with, and you can deal with it well and you can deal with it poorly, but it's just a part of the human experience in that future period of time.
Yeah, well, I think it's better.
Absolutely.
Better than when they just take a side and show how good one thing is over the other.
I think we can be more critical of the characters, like Duncan was kind of teasing at earlier, and we'll get into that. But I think some of the characters are kind of wavering in a way that was kind of weird about how they feel.
And it is definitely commenting, or it's an exaggerated version of the way a lot of people live today. So it's sort of
there were parts of it where I thought he was like laying it on really thick with, this is my little spiel about gun control, or this is my spiel about, you know, the environment. You know, that stuff could have been a little less heavy, but he is telling you what he thinks in that respect. It's tough because it's a great book. I don't want to say it's a great book for everybody, you know, but I also don't want to say like you'd only like it if you were born after 1970. You know, I think anyone can enjoy it, but it's not for everyone, if that makes sense.
He mentions people in Japan, who, this sort of whole generation of kids in Japan who have become shut-ins and refuse to go out and socialize in the real world. That's like a real thing, and it's probably happening in other countries as well. It's a real and present danger, and it almost shows the attraction of that kind of life. You can live this fantastical virtual world that is so much more full of life and color than the drab and dreary real world.
And in the meta sense, none of us would be talking to each other if we didn't all hang out in an online forum.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
That way.
Yeah, we wouldn't
I definitely would be one of the plugged-ins, I think.
Yeah, it's tempting, definitely.
Well, I mean, you could pretty much be whatever you want to be, which is, you know... What else do people really want?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
And it's free. That's another big part of it.
Some of it's free.
Well, just
there's this sort of ticking clock, I guess, in the background. This is all going to end if we just live permanently in these little capsules. Like, eventually the electricity's going to run out. Someone will forget to pay the bill.
I'd like to have gotten more sort of backstory on, like, what happened. It kind of, like, gives little hints, like, these bits of kind of vague information, like, out of gas, the recession continued for decades, and things are collapsing. But I kind of want to know if it's hopeless, if it would have been hopeless if people had been, if it would still have been hopeless if people had been actively trying to combat the problem, or if it's literally just a doomed conclusion and this is all the people can do is get whatever enjoyment they can before everything falls to shit.
Yeah, the real world really isn't given much form, and maybe that's the point, that it is just sort of this gray haze that nobody really knows what's going on and what's the point. It's all sort of, it is a very nihilistic perception people have of it.
Anything else to say on the non-spoiler side of things? I don't know if it'll be a classic of sci-fi, but it's definitely one of the biggest bestsellers, you know, so far of this decade at least, or the century, and it's a go-to book in the sci-fi section.
I think if you're a gamer, you should definitely, I think you'd get something out of it. It's enjoyable from that perspective. Just like the way the action plays out, it is so reminiscent of a video game with like pickups and upgrades, and you know, you have to face down the boss and you have to solve puzzles. It's exciting on that front, and I think it's vividly sort of described, those encounters. Mm-hmm.
Would any of you consider it a young adult novel instead of a general adult novel, or what?
A new adult.
I think you mean a new adult novel. Yeah.
I'm going.
So you're joking.
Greg
you guys
says,
are joking, but it is a new adult novel. No, I think it's a good book for young adults as well. You know, it's better than a lot of the books that are written just for young adults, but it's got action. It's got, you know, there's no graphic real love scenes or there's some violence, but that's about it.
Well,
know?
Brett, what do you think is a new adult?
You've gone from being a new adult to being an old geezer who actually played an Atari in my head. So yeah, I don't know what to think of you now.
I don't know, man. I think that it would be hard for kids to relate to the actual material, but I think they could relate to Zach was, or was it Duncan that was talking about all the like the leveling up and the getting stuff from beating bosses, that sort of thing. Like the gamer part of it is, I think they'd get, but not the nostalgic part.
Yeah, I think I can imagine 12-year-olds understanding this. I don't think it's too complicated.
Not understanding it, but just they don't get the nostalgic side that some of us
all
get
right.
when they're That's talking true, yeah. about things, and it's like, well, what the hell is that?
Yes, but Klein does a very good job of explaining almost every single reference.
He does.
Make, so
he does.
You can just look it up on Wikipedia or go to the YouTube video of the song that he references and just get it. Like
thoroughly explains.
I'm sure a lot of people did, because I mean, for the first person to admit, I did not get everything he referenced, and like the ones I was excited about, I love those, and the ones I didn't know, I looked it up. It was something that I particularly wanted to know what he was talking about. The few times he didn't explain it,
he does go out of his way to try to make it accessible to people that wouldn't get all the references. Which I suppose, if you are in the know and all the references, it can be a bit tiresome that he's kind of sugarcoating it for people that don't get it. But you also, if you're trying to have a successful book, you have to make it for as many people as could possibly be interested in the book.
Yeah, if he really enjoys this geek culture too, it's like he's kind of opening it up for another group of people that never experienced it. They can go back and Google, you know, Google adventure, and they're like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck he's talking about? It's a blob on a screen. Which, go back, I want that little square to be my avatar.
Very nice.
How big would the square be?
It'd have to be humans. Well, it'd be two-dimensional, so you just step on you, right? You've got to be a
kid. I'd look like the sun, okay?
Oh, okay.
Except for that would be round, and I'd be a square. Shit. Just move along.
You haven't thought this through.
Square pegs and round holes.
All right, so that'll wrap up the spoiler-free section of our review, which I'm very proud that we actually succeeded.
Friends behind, cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. See, we can go where we want to, places they will never find, and we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance.
All right, so let's get into the spoiler section there. I just wanted to discuss the Oasis in general, just to start off. Do you guys think this is something that would happen to the extent that it happens in the book, or do you think it's more you have to suspend your disbelief just to accept that it would get to that level? Because I feel like parts of it were I could totally believe, and parts of it, like, I can't imagine, like, my grandma, you know, jacking into the Oasis, even if she started it when she was 50, and so getting into it the way a lot, like, Mrs. Whatever, the lady who went to virtual church all the time.
Yeah, I feel like you definitely need to have been raised before the internet came out. It's, like, all you've ever known, and because it is so much a part of, like, I don't know, the way you communicate and think about the world with emails and even mobile phones. It's just this little window into the internet that you constantly have with you. It's just kind of, it's the first thing you check when you wake up or just before you go to sleep. You pick it up as you leave the house. It's constantly with you. You almost feel anxious when you don't have it. So I think it's starting to rewrite the way we think about things.
Yeah, I think this book really is pretty much an exaggerated version of contemporary reality. It's kind of like what we have, but bigger and better, or bigger and worse, as the case may be, depending on what you're looking at. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the virtual reality aspect, I don't know if we could achieve necessarily what's going on in this book anytime soon, but I think it's definitely a distinct possibility. I think we're going that direction. We have, you know, visors and haptic gloves and things, as clunky as they may be, these things aren't being developed. The question is, can they be sort of made into a accessible commercial product that anyone could use? That's kind of the big stepping stone, I think, because right now they're kind of just grossly expensive.
Probably not that good comparatively to what we have here.
It almost blends together a bunch of virtual worlds that we already have, like Facebook and video games like World of Warcraft and streaming video like Netflix. It just kind of pushes them all into this one big realm that, like, you would never want to leave. And I think the commercialization is an aspect of it, because the fact that it's free, it sort of built so much popularity initially that it built its own infrastructure in a very sort of strong foundational way that I think it could sustain itself if that kind of, you know, it'd have to be done what right in order to sustain itself. But I think I could see a version of it, maybe not virtual reality, but a version of that through screens, like screens in each room of our house being linked to this one big sort of virtual domain.
The thing that I can't fathom is the breadth of sort of references to other media. I can't imagine copyright law would actually be allowed to have all these sort of homages to different things in the past. I don't think that aspect would work out.
Well, that's kind of what worried me, the fact that it's almost like creativity and creating art has kind of ceased to exist. There's no more authors. There's no more artists. It's just fans kind of obsessing and remixing and reciting all of their old favorite properties from the 80s and whatever. Yeah. I feel like it's a dangerous kind of instinct.
It's like writing fan fiction instead of writing your own novel?
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess, yeah. But even less than that.
Do you sing about fan fiction, Paul?
I think it's just
a world of pain. Sorry.
I think it's tough to write a book about a fictitious future, because then you're missing a whole bunch of stuff that was created in between that time. So he's kind of only got the stuff that has actually happened to work with. So it's hard to bridge the gap, you know, in the 30 years from now that this has happened. So it seems like nothing's been created, but for all we know, they could have made a movie in 2037 that everybody loved that they have in this thing, but he's not talking about it because it doesn't exist in his world.
And we're also getting the perspective of these people that are obsessed with the 80s.
You know? 80s, right. Correct.
This is
correct.
Like the super Gunter, Egg Hunter, they're called Gunter's points of view. You know, this is their stuff. And it seems like they're always just trying to one-up each other on their references and on hey, look what I found, you know, stuff like that. But
in the dorkiest possible ways.
But like, I was just thinking, like, is it more enjoyable to watch a movie in a virtual world than just to sit and watch a movie? Because I would think that would be less comfortable than to, unless you're in the movie. Like,
you're close to the screen, right?
Well, you're in the screen, you know.
Exactly.
And like video games. Like, I feel like the Nintendo Wii kind of proved that people prefer a more archaic controller.
And
to the,
you know, in fairness, part of that is how clunky it is and how poorly
that's true, designed. Yeah.
Okay, but about like watching TV, watching movies in a virtual thing, which is something you can actually do, like in the GTA games, you can like watch TV while you're just playing the video game and sit there and watch TV. I'd rarely ever done that just to briefly see what they do, but it's kind of a thing that I don't know why it put it in there to like satirize and mock something, but you don't do it for like the general entertainment of it.
But it's still on the screen, right? Like in the game, because you're watching on the screen, right?
But, well, you're of varying degrees of technology, how immersive it can be, but
right, that's
the same concept.
It's once it's completely 3D, like with no lag, and it feels 100% real to you, I'm sure it would be different. But it's tough for me to wrap my head around that, because I've, you know, I played that silly Nintendo, was it game, Nintendo something boy, Virtual Boy? Like, that, I remember playing that, and like, you know, virtual reality games. But we don't have anything that's really close to this. You know, Oculus Rift is getting there, I guess, but we're not even there with that. But,
I know that these guys are Gunters, and they're like 80s freaks, but I think they proved the rule that they want to sit around and play the video game with a controller inside the virtual world. Yeah. So clearly they want the controller more.
Yeah.
That's true.
I was just going to say the multitasking thing is, I feel like that's another big sort of present thing where we are doing so many different things at once. Like we'll be listening to a podcast and playing video games and checking our email or checking our phone, and it's for just becoming this receptacle for like noise and colors.
And I think, Greg, you mentioned in the show notes that it seems unfathomable that given all of that, that they would be able to have the attention span to watch like 200, a movie 200 times. But I think that the explanation for that might be that they are kind of plugged into all this other nonsense while they're watching it, maybe. But maybe not, because they're so like, they know everything.
I understand that completely, but like he says at one point that he's seen Highlander several hundred times. Like, I love certain movies, but I don't think there's a movie that I've seen more than like 20 or maybe 30 times. You know,
yeah. I could barely get through it once.
He's probably exaggerating.
Yeah.
For one.
No, but he goes out of his way to say, like, I've literally watched every single episode of Silver Spoons or something like that, you know, like, and I pay super, like, that just, like, he doesn't have time. Even
yeah,
though he's like 20 hours a day, he doesn't have time to do that.
If you added up all the stuff he did about how he completed all the video games over and over again, watched all the movies, watched all the shows, he would have to be, like, 80 years old by now to have done all that in the time, and he's only 17 or whatever.
But I think it's sort of almost the video game mindset. Like, he's not watching it as a film goer. He's watching it as a puzzle. He's sort of researching it and studying it and trying to figure out the glitches and the Easter eggs of this artifact as though it were a game.
That would take even more time, though.
Yeah,
it?
Going frame by frame through Game of Thrones trailers.
But you think about how much more time you spend on a video game than you would on a movie. Like, you can spend 20 hours on a single video game, and it's much more, like, it flows much easier than a movie.
Not the video games he's playing.
Yeah, well,
if he's playing Atari games, there's not 30 hours of an Atari game.
But there are people that play video games, like, hundreds of times, people that do that kind of stuff where they try to optimize the experience as much as seemingly possible, and I can see that sort of being applied to the movie watching. I think that would make sense. It, obviously, like you guys say, it's kind of infeasible that he would be able to watch it and play and do all of this stuff, but as a, like, in general, like, I think that I can buy the element of him, like, rewatching the same thing hundreds of times, like Duncan says, for that sort of reason of kind of decoding it as much as possible and trying to figure out the hidden element.
And that's kind of what worries me as well, like, the fact that are they even enjoying these things, or are they just doing them because Halliday says they're supposed to? It's like, do they enjoy them, or are they just doing it? It's almost like a biblical text that they're arguing over interpretations of what Halliday might like or might not like, and I don't know.
That kind of leads me, like, do you think now that the hunt is over, like, all this 80s nostalgia will just be like a thing of the past? Like, because it seems like the Oasis is almost built on this 80s references, nostalgia, world, planets, you know, planet Gygax, planet everything, that now that it's done, like, people will be like, oh, what's next? Or do you think that it'll keep going like that?
I think for the Gunters who were involved in it deeply, they'll still feel nostalgic about it because it was a part of their lives for so long. So just like people that lived in the 80s, they'll kind of get all the references and still have their little group thing. But for the general public, I feel that they would move on from the 80s and just do other stuff.
I hope this guy invested heavily in pop culture stuff, 80s pop culture stuff, before he died. That's probably why his company's worth so much. That, because they're selling nothing. They're like, oh, you're traveling from there to there. Okay, it's ones and O's, but it's going to cost you this much. And, oh, you want to buy that? That's cool. It doesn't really exist, but thanks for the money.
It's just like free-to-play MMOs today, where you can log on and play, but then they suck the money out of you eventually.
I remember being in, like, eighth grade, and my friend built a character on Diablo and sold it on eBay. And I was like, you just made money on the real world selling. He's like, yeah, you can do that. And it didn't work out for me, but that was my first experience of, like, this kind of thing of, like, just, yeah, that does happen.
It's interesting that in this, like, the currency is the game currency. Like, that is the real world currency that people seem to operate off of because it's that pervasive.
Greg, did you actually make a Diablo character that no one wanted?
I tried to, but I didn't even finish. I have very short attention span. That game just scared the shit out of me. I did finish it, but I had nightmares. Charbad the something, that first evil goat dude. I remember him. He's, like, burned into my brain. Anyway, I did have the one point, and I don't know if that was this Alex that responded about with the Dune stuff, or was that
Yes, Jack? That's me.
Okay. We can have a little discussion about this.
Enthusiasm for this book, I'd rather talk about Dune.
Oh, I'll always talk about Dune, but yep. It's, I don't know if it's a pitfall, but it's something that always takes me out of these kind of books, is that books that are set 10, 20, 100, or 1,000 years in the future, they always reference stuff from our cultural, oeuvre, I guess. You know, they reference Hitler, they reference Stalin, and, like, this, it seems like, even though it's super 80s heavy, like, he doesn't really reference anything much that happens between 2011 and 2044. You know, he references, like, the gas shortage or big picture stuff, but, you know, I feel like even though he was so immersed in the 80s culture, he would still have references to other stuff that's happened, and that always even took me out of it a little bit. And, you know, I put the bit about Dune. They do mention the Butlerian Jihad and all that, but isn't that considered super big picture stuff? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, vaguely, but... Well, you made it sound like Herbert was not concerned at all with, like, any of his made-up history. I know for Klein, he doesn't seem to be that concerned with the world-building and the historical verisimilitude of the, like, 30 years that have passed.
I think ultimately that is the reason he just didn't take the time to develop a real world that followed some kind of new fictional sequence, and he just instead decided to focus on the established, 80s stuff.
But I felt almost like every time Wade got out of the Oasis, that was, like, a break for me, because I was happy to get back
to the
real world, and I wish there was a little more explained there. Like, I liked it when he went to Ohio, and, like, you got to see, like, what's the town that he went to? The
Middleton?
Columbus is where it's all situated.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, the town where Halliday
Right, that was where Halliday was from, but, like, when he goes, I love that when he goes, you know, in the apartment building is, like, a rundown hotel, and just all the little, you know, the fingerprints, like, it was very kind of Blade Runner-y, and I liked that, but, and then I was like, oh, crap, he's getting back into the Oasis again.
That was definitely a complaint. And in terms of, like, explaining away the lack of references, I think Duncan was getting at this before. The way I kind of interpreted it is that, it's kind of exaggerated again of our current contemporary world. We're constantly rehashing old stuff instead of making new things, and that is kind of scary and depressing. And and stuff. But that I think that that's how I would explain the lack of new content beyond what we already know.
And right in the beginning, he makes it seem so grim when he's like recounting the news of the news they hear all the time about how another city went up in a mushroom cloud and all this is just falling apart all over the world.
And if there's nuclear bombs going off, I want to know about that.
Yeah.
I think it does a good job at the beginning, like emphasizing how bleak his situation is and why he would be so tempted to get into the virtual world and reach out for that golden egg that might sort of save his life. But at a certain point in the novel, he does get enough money to move out, and his aunt gets destroyed in that explosion, and he gets into a hotel or an apartment building that's pretty nice. But that's not at that point, it doesn't matter. Like his identity is so closely merged with the Oasis at that point that it doesn't matter. He doesn't care about. It's almost like more of this just gray haze. This world has no form or feature to it. It's just this kind of anxious sort of expanse that he needs to get out of as soon as possible and get in this enclosed space and paint his windows black. And it's very, very much emphasizes that isolation, I think.
He even had to program his thing to get him out of it so he could exercise and stuff. Because otherwise he would have stayed in it all the time.
I think the most depressing line is when he has to go to the bathroom or something and he walks past the mirror and he says, I saw a reflection. I didn't like what it saw. Maybe I'll have to paint the mirror black or something.
Yeah. That part was definitely rough. I thought it was undercut slightly, though, by the fact that he kind of easily is able to get himself back into shape.
I like that, though. It's like this really sort of dark pathos that sort of cuts against all the sort of fun fantasy of the rest of the novel.
Oh, yeah. I like that. I just didn't like that it was kind of made easy by the fact that he was able to get back in shape by exercising.
True, yeah.
Yeah, but that's why they have the 80s montage, the quick cuts. That was in book form, but we had that.
Oh, yeah, and he runs on that space belt or something. Yeah, that'd be cool. Rainbow Road.
Yeah, but sort of like Wade's sort of does go from being the depressed, he talks about when he was a kid, he was always picked on in school, and then when he could finally go to school in the Oasis, that was like his saving grace, basically. But kind of like his journey is a little bit of what happens to Halliday, where Halliday basically is doing the same thing, where he just can't get along with people, can't get along with the real world, and is just building up all these walls around him. And that's, he had that kind of little, not fairy tale ending, but like, it ended on like a cool little line where, and I didn't want to go back in the Oasis for the first time ever. Like, oh yeah, that was the point, right?
Go outside, that's what a girlfriend will do for you.
Right. But I did like the when he was talking with Artemis about what they would do with the money, and she kind of get angry at him that his goal was to basically leave the planet behind. She wanted to stay and save it, and that kind of, and of course he changed a little bit by the end with that, but that's something we could talk about a little bit. Like, it's always fun to, if you had $1 billion, what would you do? But if you have this kind of control, do you think you would, do you think you guys would, it's easy to say you'd use it for good, but which character did you kind of understand, like, their point of view, or would you identify with in regards to their goals?
And I think that shows his growth, maybe, because at the beginning he does want to escape. He wants to escape to the virtual world, and he even says if he does win the Easter egg, he'd try and escape the planet. He's constantly running from something, but Artemis wants to stay and try and change the world. But he sort of catches up to her in that sense. He says, we're going to save the world together. So I guess that shows his kind of evolution.
The character arc is that you do what your girlfriend says.
Exactly. do what you're told.
Exactly. In terms of what I would do, I think I would be in sort of the Artemis camp of trying to make things better, but I would have no notion of how to get that done. So I would have to hire a bunch of people to make it happen, because I don't know what you would do to fix all those problems.
Plastics, invest in plastics.
I mean, now that he has now that he controls the entire Oasis, I feel like it probably could be done. He has the wealth of the world at his fingertips.
Yeah, he's kind of master of the universe at that point, since everybody's so reliant on it.
I think I create the Matrix, and then anybody who doesn't want to come unplugged, I let them stay plugged in and use them as batteries. And then the world has energy.
Yeah, maybe he is full supervillain and tries to, yeah.
I'm not a supervillain.
Generators with
if they don't want to go in, they don't have to.
What about you, Alex? What would you do?
Oh, dear. I sort of concur with Zach. I would be in the Artemis camp, but have no idea how to implement my wealth to save the world.
Just told you how.
They should do a reverse Farmville where you get points in the Oasis if you plant trees in the real world.
There's the answer.
If he is making a sequel, I'd love to see this explored, because I do really want to know if sort of the world is doomed, or if there's a way to kind of dry it out from this despair and this terribleness.
Well, he does have a new book coming out later in the year. It's called Armada, but it's just a separate book. But he has talked about how he's writing a sequel. So I don't know. I hope it's from the point of view of someone who is poorer than Wade, and he could never get into the Oasis, so he has no. He's just been forced to live in the actual world while it crumbles around him. I like that.
Yeah, the classism was another interesting aspect, where it depended how much money you had in the real world to what you could afford in the Oasis. You know, you couldn't reach certain levels if you didn't have the money. You wouldn't have access to the really strong sort of XP areas. You couldn't buy the best armor. So that was kind of cool. But I guess Halliday did.
And he was doing all right.
That's true, yeah. I guess Halliday did sort of program it so that anyone could rise to the top. That's kind of, you know, he wanted a student to find the first key. So he did have that sort of underdog thing.
Wanted them to find the first key, but they wouldn't be able to get off that planet to go to the first place. Like, they get the key, but they can't get to the next part.
Yeah.
Or did they get something for winning?
Well, no, he got
50,000 or something, right? Yeah, yeah.
There's
he got coins,
cave,
too.
He got to level 10 from the cave, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was, like, a whole bunch of treasure.
And enough experience to get to level 10 so you can actually fight other places.
But then it makes it sound super easy to level up once you've sort of achieved it. Like, he's like, oh, I just got to level 99 or whatever.
Well, that was kind of, like, one of my favorite parts where he did get to, like, level 100, and he was just like, I got my spaceship, I got my X-Wing, I got my Firefly, I got my Ghostbuster vehicle. He's just, you know, enjoying what he never had before. And he was, like, the celebrity, but it's all fake because no one knows who he actually is.
Well, yeah, well,
television station.
Yeah. He became content and then didn't keep trying as hard as the others were.
Also,
he lost
the licensing work. Like, is all that stuff public domain by that point, or is he just buying the rights? Or, like, in this world, it's impossible for, like, companies to protect their copyrights.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Well, it sounds like they were all the things were sold. Like, maybe they had to buy them. And if I'm LucasArts, I sell the rights to build an X-Wing, but you can only build them if I sell them to you. Otherwise, just people would just be creating their own shit all the time.
There is no LucasArts, Brett.
Yeah, Disney. Okay. Well, they talk to Disney and get the X-Wing.
He bought it back.
it's like what you said. In the past 30 years, maybe all of the movie studios have gone bankrupt. Maybe they tried to make movies and no one watching them, and they've just had to sell all their properties for, like, meager money to Halliday.
One other thing I want to talk about was, in the beginning, Wade kind of has this, like, monologue about how he wishes someone told him how awful the world was when he was a kid so he could be better prepared. And he basically goes on for, like, 3 pages of, you know, what happened, the gas shortage, and, you know, we basically, like, raped the planet and destroyed it so we could survive for a little bit, and now it's awful. I don't think that I would want to know how awful my world is when I'm 3, you know. That wouldn't make me driven to change it. I think I would probably just implode and blow up, or mentally at least. But do you think it's a good thing, Nestle, to know how awful the world is? I mean, that's why parents don't tell their children how awful everything is when you're super young, but there are some things it would be nice to know.
Nihilism builds character, Greg. Don't you know this?
Greg, didn't you always want there to be a post-apocalyptic world when you were a kid?
That's right.
I love the postman and I love that stuff, but I am under no illusions that I would be able to survive in that world. I've except first against the wall.
I don't know. I don't think you realize it when you're a kid anyway, because, like, if you're poor and you're a kid, you don't really know you're poor until you get, like, into school and you notice other kids have things that you don't. But when you're, like, 3 years old, you're not like, oh, I'm poor. I don't have anything. So I don't know how old you have to be to actually comprehend, like, the way the world is.
Yeah, and I think this is relatable even in our world, which isn't as bad as the one in this book. But, I mean, this is a thing that happens. Like, there's some shitty stuff that you don't learn until later. And even just in general, like, oh, the part that he mentions, like, everyone dies and, like, all this, like, stuff that a kid probably wouldn't want to hear. Like, I mean, this happens. So I think that I probably wouldn't want to hear it, but I think it happens to everybody. Well, that's a downer, right? Just,
yeah. Well, no, like, there are a lot of super dark parts of this book, even if they're not delved into totally, but they...
He kind of skips over them, and then he's like, and I had an X-Wing.
He calls it, like, the global energy crisis, like, capital G, capital E, capital C. Like, I want to know more about the global energy crisis, you know.
And he sets it up as so grim and hopeless and everything is terrible, but then as things progress, he's kind of, like, good at everything and succeeds at whatever he does, and everything works out all the time, and nothing ever goes wrong, and so it's kind of at odds that way.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we can talk about that now. Just
even
that
his aunt dying was like, well,
whatever.
Poor Mrs. McGowan, you know, but it seemed like at no point was there any actual I never thought he wasn't going to make it. Like, you
no
always
tension.
Knew it's going to succeed. From not just from the book itself, but, you know, going into it, he says, this is how I did it. But it was the part where he goes undercover into the IOI, like, that seemed so unbelievable. I mean, I'm sure there's a hacker today who could, you know, build a fake identity, but it seems like he just went on to some site, He got to a forum, the guy's like, this is how you do it, but he risked basically being in there forever. Like, if it did, how did he not test it? Like, couldn't he run a simulation? I don't know, something where he's like, well, if this doesn't work out, then I'm just going to be a slave for the rest of my life. Well, we know that's not going to happen because he wrote a book about it, you know? But it just seemed too easy how they do the whole fake identity and like changing his thumbprint back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That was one part that kind of made me like step back and be like, this is just too simple.
And he made, like, no wrong turns or false diversions. Like, that one time when he was playing Pac-Man Forever, you thought, oh, he blew it and went to the wrong thing. But it turns out that was, like, a necessary thing he had to do to save it in the end to get an extra life. Yeah. There was no, like, real struggle. It was just, like, everything you do is right what you have to be doing.
It's not a trial and error. My biggest complaint in the book, just it was interesting because like there was this one moment in the book where like the tension was super high and I was like, oh my god, what's going to happen? Which was when he went to the IOA office and talked to, what's his name?
Nolan Sorrento.
Sorrento. He talked to Sorrento and then he obviously threatened to blow up his aunt's trailer, and then he does, and like dramatic. And he seemed like he was in danger, and I didn't know if he was gonna like what was gonna happen. But then that just goes away. Like as soon as he gets in his new apartment in Columbus and sort of sets himself up there, there's never any danger for the rest of the book. Sorrento and like IOI in general are so distant from the character, and they just don't seem like a threat anymore from that point because he's safe and they don't know where he is and they assume he's dead. Well, until he reveals himself, and even then they don't do anything, and they just don't seem ever threatening from that point on. And like, and sort of like the vulnerableness of his existence, the railroad, where he's not invincible and really powerful like he is in the Oasis, just never comes back. And I was kind of frustrated by that.
That could have been a cool subplot where he's constantly being hunted by the IOA sort of assassins, I guess, where he's constantly moving from apartment to apartment, covering his tracks, and it's contrasting the gritty darkness of the real world with his super, like, you know, hero avatar in that world. So he's sort of fighting him in this world and being hunted by them in the other world. That could have been a cool contrast, but
so
most of the time he spent in the
happen.
Yeah, it's just sort of the danger goes away pretty quickly.
All you have to do is don't go on the internet using a IOI connection and you're fine, because the second you're off that, they don't know where the hell you are.
Why didn't they kill those other guys as soon as they found out where they were? Why did they wait?
Well, why did they keep like actual folders on, this is how we're gonna kill this
guy? Oh my god. When they had like a video of them killing them, what the fuck are you keeping incriminating evidence for?
They're big enough.
That whole sequence is ridiculous. Especially afterwards when they realize they've been hacked and they don't like check to see what he's done. Like they don't check that one of their robots has like been programmed to do something, like blow up their entire shield. Like, check it out. Double check what's happened.
Or also just like, once they realized they thought they killed him, and then they had that window of like, okay, this guy's done. But then when he shows up again in the Oasis, it seemed like they didn't care to get him again. Yeah, like they were just like, all right, he beat up. But they're supposed to be this omnipotent, you know, over all powerful entity. But.
Just Sorrento's arrogance at the end, where he's saying, you know, you'll never get past this force field, when he's easily hacked into their systems, like it's ridiculous. This guy, like, he's so complacent.
Well, he was Mecha Godzilla, so.
Mecha Godzilla.
I guess that's
was nice. Amazed that the Voltron died so fast. Like, why did Voltron die so fast?
It was such a funny line.
I was thinking, do you guys think they would have been better off in the tension department if this book had done that thing where if you die in the Oasis, you die in real life? Do you think you should have done that?
I don't think so. I like the fact that
I don't think anybody would ever go into the Oasis. Right. That was the fact.
Well, maybe like IOI flips a switch at the end or something and they make it happen. It's just interesting. It's a very benevolent sort of virtual world in terms of that than I've seen in sort of other media. So,
well, you lose like everything you've ever done, though.
Yeah.
Right, that's from like the gamer point of view. Like, I could appreciate that, where like I remember playing certain where like, oh, I'm at this level, if I lose everything, where, you know, I felt bad for like Artemis and for Shoto when they died. I was like, oh my god, they've spent years just getting to that level. But of course they had what, two paragraphs of me feeling bad for them, and then, would you like to restore your friends everything? Yes,
exactly, right. And like, part of it too was like, it was like, oh, Shoto died and now he's talking to me on the microphone. Like, yeah. I don't know, it felt weird. But I don't think they should have gone that way. I kind of like the idea of this being a very sort of again benevolent kind of virtual world on the surface, and it was made by a person with good intentions, and and stuff. So I don't think that needed to be there. I just think that if there is a criticism I could make mainly on this book, it is that Klein didn't really know how to manage his tension too well. I think
another thing I was a bit disappointed with is how the bad guys were just so clearly bad and the good guys were always good, and it like never felt sorry for the bad guys or bad about the good guys. I kept thinking that like H or Artemis were going to be like secretly working for the Sixers or something, or like be forced into it, or somebody would switch sides at some point, or you would get more background on people, but it never really happened.
Am I the only one who thought that in the first encounter with Sorrento before he revealed that he was going to blow up, that he was actually a good guy, like kind of like a puppet on the strings kind of guy? He didn't want to be doing what he was doing. I actually thought that.
Oh, I didn't think that. But I love that he was like, if they fire you and put me in charge, I'll do it. And he's like, they said they'll do it. Never mind.
He seemed very expendable, and I thought there would be kind of some kind of redemption with him, but no.
At the end?
But he had very little characterization beyond smarmy bureaucrat, though.
And also, when he goes undercover in IOI, I thought he was going to like join the Sixers and then use that like ultra detonation device to kill himself and all of them so that his friends would be able to win. But then when he just hacks their system and takes over and wins it by himself anyway, that was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, he really
I thought it
would have
been a good
anything.
Twist if he joined the Sixers and then his friends all hated him, thought he was a sellout, and then he destroyed all the Sixers. But that's just how it went.
Yeah, we all knew that the Cataclysm was going to be used. I mean, that's like the biggest example of Chekhov's gun. It's like Chekhov's nuclear bomb of complete annihilation. when you spend a page describing this device, it's going to show up, and you knew that they didn't have it, so it meant the Sixers had it. And I think even said, like, everybody knew that the Sixers spent some crazy money. It's like, okay, when are they going to blow up the planet? So, yeah, that really wasn't a surprise, but he had the special life, so of course.
The bigger one for me was the coin from the Pac-Man, because I was convinced it had to be something important.
Oh,
like,
right.
I was like, when is this going to come up? And those coincided, of course. Although I love the line there when he's like, and then we all died. I thought that was...
Yeah, that was good. I didn't expect that.
But did any of you think that Morrow was playing them? Or because he just came... I was like, he can't be this good. I mean, he's got to be like using them either to get the other half of the fortune, but he just stayed good the whole time. I was like, oh, I guess he was just a really nice guy.
Well, no one who lives in Rivendell is evil. I mean...
Rivendell,
he sort of was. Rivendell. He sort of was like the elves. He was just kind of completely complacent, and he didn't really care about what happened to the world.
You just blew
he just
my
enjoyed
mind.
It as
he is Elrond. He just did the, yeah. You can stay here. You can hang out. You can drink my. You can have my Limbus, but I can't really help you with anything. All right, that's actually really smart. So never mind.
Like he doesn't. It's just a game to him. He doesn't like the Sixers, and he sees like they're obviously cheating, and it's like he's one of the. He's the last wizard. He's supposed to like make sure everything's running well and
no,
running
he's
by the book.
He's hiding out in chat rooms listening to people.
He doesn't care. Like he's just playing games. He's throwing parties while the world's like crumbling around him. Like oh, I guess he did the educational thing. That was kind of a good sort of him stepping away from the Oasis and trying to remedy some of that damage. But still, he's like considering the
but
amount of power he had.
They kind of would have failed if he didn't intervene. So he did come in through in the end and like help them
eventually.
Win.
Yeah, just like Gandalf. Like he'll push them into good things.
Bravo.
I feel like the way that they kind of explain it is that he was kind of estranged from the contest and the Oasis itself in a way, like he didn't want to be involved. But the weird like thing that challenges that is that he is kind of in the Oasis and like reveling in it just as much as everyone else. And that was the thing that bugged me, was that he was the scathing critic of the virtual reality and that he's participating like everyone else. Like I don't know, that was very strange.
Well, he's like all powerful in there. I would probably be in there too.
That's fair.
I wonder if his power is equal to Wade's power now, or if Wade's stronger.
No, I don't think so. I think Wade's got more.
Well, Wade can just delete his program.
Because if Sorrento had won, then he would be a wizard. Like, would they have to like fight it out or something? Him and Morrow. Or would Morrow just leave the Oasis completely? Because it was now under the Sixer control.
Basically,
there's plenty of fan fiction explaining that, I'm sure.
Like, it was completely in Morrow's interest that the Sixers lost, yet he did nothing.
He was a well-adjusted person. He had a real full life in the real world. He didn't...
Oh, whatever.
He could have walked away.
He had a girlfriend.
He didn't need it anymore. I like that you can buy an antimatter bomb on eBay.
Yeah.
Also, way to go eBay for still being around and
hanging in.
Yeah, same thing with YouTube. It's the first place he thinks of. It's like, I'll put it on YouTube.
Was Facebook mentioned at all or no?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
don't remember Facebook that. Or Twitter was mentioned. But yeah.
Well, would you really need it anymore when you can just hang out with people in person? Like, well, in person, put air quotes around that. But, you know, like, you could actually sit there and talk to them. You don't need to, like, check on their status. Doesn't matter where they are. You can see them.
I was interested. What did you guys think of the ending with Artemis? Like, the fact that she dumps him halfway through and then refuses to talk to him. Did you guys have any thoughts on why that happened? Like, was she just too invested in getting the egg, or did she, I don't know, she too freaked out by his affection? Or?
It was getting too real.
Getting too real, yeah.
Well, she had a birthmark on her face, and she was worried that that would make him hate her.
Was that it?
She was, like, all convinced that he wouldn't think she was, like, attractive in real life.
I think she's like that just in general, because that's, she is, you know, she, that's her fail, you know, she thinks she's ugly when she's actually not, but I mean, she was close, she was one of the top five people, she wanted to win.
She wanted to win,
and
yeah.
And she was being distracted, and he was too. They hadn't gotten anywhere in their happy times together.
Well, I think that's part of it, though, like, it wasn't going anywhere further than that, because she wasn't going to let it, and why keep going with that if it means you're not going to win the contest? You know what
and
I mean?
He dropped the L-bomb, and that's when it all blew up after that.
Yeah, always make the woman say it first, come on.
Yeah. That's bad too, though. That has its own range of issues. But anyway, I think, like, it could have been managed better. I think this was another kind of badass or weak aspect of the novel was how that romance was handled. It kind of felt a little unbelievable or underdeveloped. I think it was that whole breakup was primarily sort of clearly and sort of too visibly used as a means to trigger Wade's kind of downfall and his fall from grace and kind of pulling back from that.
Well, she keeps saying, like, you don't really love me, you only love the me that's here, and, like, that's kind of a debate they have. Is, are we actually who we are in the Oasis, or is this just an invented, constructed personality? And Wade says, no, it's raw personality. So I was wondering if, like, I don't know, she didn't think he actually loved her, or he only loved the kind of the idea of her, or the avatar that she'd created. And...
Well, he joked, like, what if she ended up being a fat guy from Houston named Steve? Like, would he still love her?
What if she was, like, H, reverse?
Sorry, Zach.
But even putting aside, like, body image, it's almost like the personality that she puts forth is, like, fake. That's what she's implying. And she is a very different personality than the one we see in the Oasis. She's much more timid and shy.
You're always going to be when you can die in real life and you, like, have flaws.
Yeah.
And then you're in a game where you're, like, the perfect you want to be and you can't die, so you're more confident in general.
And for those of you who have met up with other foreign people in real life, isn't there an initial awkwardness where, like, we kind of know each other, but we don't really know each other?
Absolutely. I've done that with foreign people and just other people I've met from online first. So, yeah, that happens.
I also thought Wade was kind of – the way he obsessed about her was a little bit – maybe not creepy, but sort of – I don't know. Again, it comes to that idea of – he loved her character, her avatar, rather than her. Like, he liked the way she loved her. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't buying that he loved her.
Anime character or something, yeah.
I thought the whole loving her thing was kind of classic infatuation, kind of weird, like, obsession. And I wasn't buying it even till the end. So I had less faith in him than Artemis did, apparently. So
you're like, come on, dude. It's the first girl you've ever met.
Exactly.
There's more out there.
And you're just a senior in high school, so it is logical that you shouldn't, like, that's your one true love forever and ever.
But that's the high school mentality.
Yeah, it's reasonable that he would act that way and think that way. But
yeah,
also,
it's believable.
And he doesn't have
parents.
She's
a year older, and she's a much more worldly and experienced person because she's 20. So yeah.
He doesn't have, like, that safety net to be like, no, there's more people out there. He just has to dwell on it because he has nobody telling him otherwise.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even H at one point says, be careful. And I think it goes back to that idea of, like, it's a fantasy. You've got to keep remembering it's a fantasy. You're not actually – you people aren't actually touching or meeting or whatever. It's just this, I guess, movie playing in your head. I don't know. Maybe, like, he was getting too close to it or something. Getting too sucked into the Oasis.
So, Duncan, you just said H, and even though it's spelled in the book, spelled
he's
out...
He's Australian, that's all I said.
You kind of disconnect between the way that you're saying it and the way it was spelled in the book.
Sorry? H.
Verb.
H. Yeah. Well, he says H, doesn't he? Like, when he's trying to guess the name? I don't know how to pronounce it, H.
Yeah, I was just noting the pronunciation.
Yeah, we say H thing. Here. You say H.
All right.
H.
Even though
isn't that an old Eddie Izzard bit? He say, we say H because there's a fucking H in there.
Yeah.
There's no H in this, actually. So.
Yeah, that's true. Right. So you're on the right this time.
It's the letter H, though, so you just don't say anything.
Yeah.
It's the phonetic look of the letter H.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Australian.
He's come from a family of weird non-cheese doodle eating criminals. He can let go.
And also, I also listened to the audiobook, which I thought Will Wheaton did great on. And so I didn't know it was spelled out H until I looked online afterwards. I thought it was just the letter H because it never really spells it out.
It's one thing that I really get frustrated with when I listen to an audiobook. It's like I never know how to spell anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. And some things aren't even what I thought they were. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry, Greg.
No, I was going to say this was one of the, I've listened to a lot of audiobooks. This is one of the just my favorite audiobooks. It's Will Wheaton does an amazing job, and I highly recommend the audiobook as well. And it was just really weird listening to it, and then having Will Wheaton talk about himself as a character in the book. It was just,
I half expected him to be like, "And that's me, guys."
probably an asshole for saying it, but who's Will Wheaton?
He was on Star Trek. He played Crusher.
Wesley Crusher.
But he's like big in the world, I guess. Yeah.
Huh. He's also
he's a known internet personality now. He has a YouTube show called Tabletop on the
called
Nintendo
I Was
Network.
Wesley Crusher.
No, he kind of makes fun of that old personality. Not make fun of, but kind of tongue in cheek about how that was his past. But now he does a lot of online stuff.
Yeah,
he briefly had a sci-fi show where he was talking about different nerd culture stuff.
So he's like Neil Patrick Harris now? Like, he's cool in his own right, but he's like, I used to be famous for something else, but now I have this. No? All right, never mind.
Well, yeah, that's accurate. Similar. That's accurate.
He's also in Stand By Me. He's one of the kids in that, if you can believe
it. Yeah, so he's a child actor back in the day.
That's who Will Wheaton is.
Sorry, guys.
He was like one of the first people to get like a ton of followers on Twitter. I think that's another claim to fame.
Really?
Yeah,
I did like how we had him and Cory Doctorow to be as voted as the consoles of the Oasis, which is I appreciated that. But they did call them like those old geezers, so they went in their 70s. I just want to make sure we talked about sort of the exchange that Wade actually has with Halliday at the end of it when he completes the hunt. And Halliday's quote is basically, you know, it's the theme of the book where he says, "I created the Oasis because I never felt at home in the real world. I didn't know how to connect with people there. I was afraid for all my life, right up until I knew it was ending. That was when I realized, as terrifying and painful as reality can be, it's also the only place where you can find true happiness, because reality is real." So this sort of, I mean, he talks about people who meet people, get married, and live in the Oasis. Do you think anyone in the Oasis is truly happy?
I think Cypher would say yes. Ignorance is bliss. Cypher from the Matrix. He wanted to go back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he was eating his steak.
Yeah, he did.
Even though it was ones and zeros.
But he was happy, you know what I mean? Like, I guess that depends on the world that you're living in, but it sounds like there wasn't much happiness in the world that he was living in, and there was never going to be. So,
well, I guess if happiness is just a part of the brain that's being stimulated, then yeah, you are technically happy in the Oasis.
Well, that settles that. Moving on.
There we go.
Oh, yeah, it's tricky. It's really tricky because I'm not sure I agree with the message there. Like, I think that there's something really to be said for living in the real world and experiencing things, literally, like actually experiencing things and not some kind of facsimile, whatever, you know, like a fake. I don't know. Like, but at the same time, like you guys say, there's still happiness. You know, you're still being stimulated. You're still experiencing things. And you can make the argument that like nothing is real except how we make it, like we define what is real and what's not, and that whole meta level of it. But yeah, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know how I feel about the quote at the end. I think there's something to be said for it, and it's kind of getting that message that modern day message of don't like connect yourself too thoroughly to the internet and whatnot. But yeah, I really don't know if I agree.
Did they even talk about the Matrix in this?
That wasn't 80s.
Yeah,
I know it wasn't 80s, but it existed.
He did. To be fair, he did go like back to the 70s to the Schoolhouse Rock and stuff, and he did go to the 90s with, you know, Space. So it wasn't.
Yeah,
just
he went with a bunch of stuff like
the
Firefly.
Skull.
Yeah, and Firefly.
He mentions the great trilogies like Lord of the Rings and Matrix and all that. Well, Matrix isn't a great
didn't
trilogy.
Didn't mention
but
the Hobbit.
No, telling.
See, you should have referenced the stuff that he knew was going to happen.
But what I'm saying is like the Matrix is so close to what this is. You think it would have come up.
Yeah,
you know?
They're like, this didn't end out well for these guys. Maybe we should pull back the throttle.
Well, I don't know.
Simulated realities are kind of an interesting... They're sort of talked about in philosophy like decades ago, before even computers were around. And
okay,
isn't
that all about the cave and the reflections of the shadows on the wall? You know?
Yeah, and it's also like the brain in the jar dilemma. Like it's this idea that if sensory perceptions can be altered by computers or whatever, then actual reality is kind of thrown under suspicion. Like if our entire understanding of reality is based on sensory data and that data can be customized, that will, then nothing is provably real.
Mm-hmm. It's that ontology, the study of being and such.
One of the ologies, yeah.
Okay.
I always get teleological and ontological mixed up. And the whole time I was
ontology.
Argument from design and argument from being, something like that. I like the quote. It did make me think, but I understand where Halliday's coming from, but also if he had a happy childhood, he never would have created the Oasis. So it's kind of glad, you know, out of darkness, some good things do come.
I was just going to say, I think it ultimately shows that even if it's almost an artificial happiness, it's not a genuine happiness. You're not actually fulfilled. It's all part of a fantasy, and these people are kind of wasting away in themselves. And
well, what does that mean, see, though?
We even see with Wade, he doesn't seem to get genuine happiness out of the thing. He does feel lonely and afraid, and he can't connect with people.
Yeah, but I think he was genuinely happy when he met H, and when they were, you know, joking with each other over their game, or, you know, comments. Like, I feel like that's the happiest he probably was but then he met a girl, you know? So it's a different kind of happen, different level. But I guess that he was happy, maybe not the pinnacle of happiness, but he was much better than what he had.
I guess that sort of is that ignorance is bliss thing. If you don't know any better, you can be perfectly happy. But once you learn of the bad side of it and the world outside, and I guess, yeah, it can be daunting.
I wonder if, like, children would play into this, because, like, these people that meet and marry online and never actually meet each other, they're never going to, like, procreate and have, like, a little, like, physical representation of their union. Or maybe they can create one on there.
There will be a physical representation of their union in the Oasis. Yeah.
Like a dinosaur.
But you know what I mean? You just never have that. You never have that piece that carries on.
Is
so
that
I
a Tamagotchi reference?
No, just some random weird thing I was going for.
I remember the Tamagotchi.
I also thought of Tamagotchi when you said that.
Okay, phew.
I haven't played that. I'm sorry.
I gotta go feed mine. I'll be right back.
He's dead under the couch.
Sorry, I derailed you, Brett.
No, I was pretty much done. I'm just saying that you can't have a baby. Like, is that something that, I don't know, not everybody has children. Obviously.
That's all that we can intrinsically value is having a baby. So the lack of that proves that a virtual world is inferior.
Right? He even says sex is completely unfulfilling in the virtual
world. And I guess in that context.
I disagree.
They'll get there.
I think after a while, maybe it would be.
Basically, that's sex the is the prime thing. Motivator. That's why we aren't going to devolve into virtual reality, because then we would get sex.
That's what we said on the horror roundtable. The first thing they'd use transporters for would be like Tinder or something. And the first thing they can use their Oculus Rift for is porn, probably.
Maybe.
That's pretty much happened with every technological advancement since.
Yeah, that's how Betamax failed.
What?
When Betamax and VHS were squaring off, Betamax was the obvious better.
VHS.
What?
We're laughing at your funny voice.
Ah, because I pronounced H properly, yeah.
We're the animals.
Zed.
I'm cultured.
So wait, Betamax didn't support porn?
Yeah, VHS supported porn. So that's
gotta follow the money.
And the dominant medium.
Wow, did that happen with Blu-ray too?
It did actually, but Blu-ray, I think, supported porn, but it didn't matter at that point because porn was on the internet, so nobody
cared.
Well,
no, like HD, DVD, did they not support porn? Nobody remember that?
I think they did, but they failed anyway because, yeah.
The Sony's better. Not when Betamax came out. Anyway, sorry.
I think how I would sort of...
Please, talk about supporting porn a little more.
The final thought I would have on this quote is that I think that good things can come out of sort of the virtual reality sort of artificial thing, like making friends like with H. and getting a better education, not feeling sort of scared every day in school, and being able to have those positive things, I think, is there. But then the opposite side, you can't get laid in that isolation. So those are the two sides of it.
Well, that kind of is the changing world, I guess, what the internet's done. People used to just be in their little proximity of where they lived, and they would talk to the people that were around them, and they were bonded by, I guess, location and culture or whatever. And now people can just get in touch with people from across the other side of the world and bond over interests rather than, yeah, country. So the internet's not all bad.
Just exercise every once in a while.
Yeah, just go for a jog every now and then.
So would any of you press the big red button, or would you let it go, at least for a while? Because part of me expected, you know, Wade to just click it, but, you know, it would basically destroy the planet, so I don't think he did, but you know, having a kill switch is, you know, there is no, I don't think there's a kill switch for the internet anywhere in the world. It feels like we've evolved beyond that point, but
I don't think Al Gore has one.
Oh yeah.
Clearly he created it.
would any of you hit the big red button and just start over?
Nope.
I think I need more information on what's going on in the world to make that choice. Like, I need to know if they're pretty much doomed already. Cause if they are, like, fuck it. Like, just have a good time while it lasts. But if there's a way to pull back, maybe there is a case to be made for getting people to be, you know, present active forces in the world and not shutting themselves in and doing nothing and being stagnant. But even then, like, I don't know if you'd want to shut the whole thing off or if you want
to slow press.
Yeah. Or if you'd want to implement programs to make things better and be maybe more, you know.
You reduce it from being 24 hours to like 20 and then 18 and then it's only online for like 10 hours a day, something like that.
Yeah.
You need to rewind it because you can't just be like, and done. And everybody's like, oh, what do I do with my life now? My job.
People would go insane. Yeah,
I feel like they're past the point of it's not just getting people to wake up. It would be doing much more damage than good.
Yeah.
I had 36 million Oasis credits and there was nothing.
But you could make dead zones where you couldn't log on for like 4 hours a day and slowly wean people off, maybe. Or
it's a dead zone. Remember those Verizon commercials, like with The Shining and stuff, where like the two little girls were like saying it's a dead zone? Do you remember those?
I don't.
That's what I was referencing.
I don't think I'd shut it down, but I feel like the Oasis is so powerful, you could almost, now that he has full control over it and just like, you know, billions and millions of dollars, he could almost use it to start trying to rebuild the world. Like, you know, they say universities aren't affordable for everyone, then make them affordable for everyone. Create universities that anyone can attend to. And, you know, use video games to actually train people to be like architects and engineers and doctors or whatever and try and fix the, like, you could, this is a massive tool you could actually use to start training people.
The Farmville thing, and there you go.
And the Farmville thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Create contests that actually reward people for like creating, you know, scientific breakthroughs or alternate energy resources or something. Work it into the experience instead of just whiling your time away playing Joust.
So they create something great, and they're like, they create something great, and you're like, oh, look at this awesome thing you get in the Oasis. He's like, yes. Oh, everybody's not on the Oasis because you created that great thing, but great job. It's kind of killing your own. I guess if he's using the money outside and not using it for in the Oasis, I don't know.
I guess just maybe direct it more, focus it on particular projects outside the Oasis, funnel the money back and forth rather than just funneling it all into the Oasis.
Well, it's not like they really need to funnel money into it. It sounds like self-sufficient, just a money generator.
I mean, resources and time. Like, you've got all these people plugged in. Put them to work.
Right. We don't know that necessarily wasn't happening. Yeah, on some level. Like, I'm sure there's like an Elon Musk type character who's trying to use it for, you know, to good stuff. But it's just that we have this very narrow view into the Oasis through.
Well, that's what Moreau did, right? He had the educational games and
stuff. He did.
But
he also probably had $600 trillion and didn't.
He could have done more.
He kind of just fucked off and built Rivendell. So
yeah, could have.
Halliday's almost the villain of this story because he created this amazing world, this world-changing device, and then he put it to work. He made a contest to make people relive his childhood.
But that was the one place he was happy.
I know. It's all a vanity project for him. It's people just trying to connect with the world. He couldn't connect with the real world, so he wanted everyone to love him in his virtual world.
So good point.
All right. So before we end it, I just wanted if you could each pick just your favorite like Easter egg or planet or just thing that you would like to go to in the Oasis or a thing that you'd like to, you know, experience. Or, you know, I really like the what do they call them, like the movies where you actually act out, like they gave a word to them at some point, but those I think were super cool, and I'd love to play those. I mean, you can, it's like karaoke for movies, but you're in the movie.
Yeah.
Was pretty cool. But of course I would love to go to the planet of Middle Earth or Planetos if they had one, but he didn't reference it at all.
What does that mean? What could that mean if he didn't mention Planetos?
That it's not a phrase.
Oh God, does that mean that George died before we finished
exactly
the book?
No.
No. What it actually means is that it wasn't popular when he wrote
it. What it means
is
that George
the
had
show
so
hadn't
much,
come out yet.
What it means is George had so much money he didn't sell the rights to it.
He had so much control.
There was no Silmarillion talk either, because Christopher Tolkien never let that shit go.
That's how much he hates fan fiction. He never saw Game of Thrones, The Song of Ice and Fire.
George is still alive in 2045, typing away on his live journal account.
Gotta be. Gotta get.
And he still hasn't finished the fucking book yet.
Don't be hasty.
All he needed was the like Oasis, and now he's never gonna finish anything.
Oh no.
I hope this doesn't come about.
Yeah. We need that book finished at all costs.
Anyone else have anything they want to say? Last thoughts?
I don't think this is a bad thing, but I don't think we've talked so much about the actual book as the, like, experience of the Oasis would be and all that.
Well, that's what 90% of the book was.
I know. It's like, what I wrote down in my notes, I was like, the second key seemed very straightforward. Why would it take so long to find? I mean, Zork dwelling not long neglected trophy case. But that doesn't really matter. I don't even know why I wrote it down.
Well, actually, that was frustrating to me because, like, it was odd for that reason that it would take that long. And it felt like it was a very simple clue. Like, I don't know why it took so long to figure it out. And I felt like the sort of actual puzzles didn't really live up to the crazy complexness that it claims that it's going to be, that it would make people, like, devote so much time and not figure it out.
Well, like, simple. Not to me, obviously. I didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. But when he was like, oh, yeah, Zork, duh, why didn't I think of that? It's like, why didn't you think of that?
Yeah, like him and like the conglomerate that has like all this information at its disposal, like why couldn't they piece it together? And like,
well, I think the conglomerate had too much information was their problem.
Yeah, I guess.
Like they had some like interviews with him that nobody had ever seen before. It's like, clearly he's not going to make that part of his game, you dumbasses.
But it was also a pacing thing for me because it was very strange that they spent so much time not accomplishing anything. Then so quickly, all of a sudden, they get the jade key, the jade gate, the diamond or the crystal key, like all at once. Like I was kind of thrown off by that.
Well, that's kind of like that happens in real competition, you know? Like
yeah, like you, it's like a puzzle.
Ran 8 minute mile, and then
ago.
Everybody did, you know? Or no one broke the home run record, and then everybody did. But
that was steroids.
I know.
And I guess the Sixers were on steroids.
Well, yeah, they were cheating.
They had like shit that was like telling them where everybody was. Like, oh, it's there. That's where they are. Oh,
it's all IROC's fault.
Hate that guy. I also don't like Daito. Daito was a dick.
Yeah.
Wait, he's not the one who died, was he?
Yeah, he
died.
Is.
And he was a dick?
Wait, that's the older
brother. Harsh.
The older brother, he died, and that's sad, but he was a dick as a character.
I thought the younger brother died.
No, it was the older one.
That was the older one.
He is
older.
Okay, yes. The one that had, like, he wanted the Ultron. He's like, no, we're taking it. He's like, you guys can have it, because I'm pretending to be Japanese. Whatever.
Oh, but for my favorite reference, I mentioned it, but I love the whole thing about the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and every single Indiana Jones movie after was terrible. I thought that was really funny. Also, like SNL still doing skits. I thought that was funny that they were still doing really terrible skits.
How the hell are they still around?
Well, Lorne Michaels hasn't aged a day in 30 years, so he'll still be around. And
oh, and favorite quote, people in glass houses should shut the fuck up. That was
definitely.
My favorite quote was knocking a few protons off the old hydrogen atom. He's talking about masturbation. <Yeah. laughs>
I had no favorite quote.
Yeah, I just like how there's a little statement at the end. I really didn't underline. I mean, there were some books that I've read for book clubs where I'm like underlining something on every page, and for this one, like I was flipping through it at the end, and I was like, I underlined maybe 5 things in the entire book. Like, it's not a super deep book, but it goes fast and it's entertaining.
So, do you think they could actually simulate the? This is actually a general question, but first, do you think they could simulate the taste of the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster? The whole like a brick smashing
it. It's lemon. It's just lemons because it's got a big twist of lemon in it, right?
Yeah, but there's like another element to it. Like your brain explodes. And stuff. Right.
How do you simulate taste?
That's what I was going to ask. Like, generally, how do they do that part? Like, can they actually eat, like, in the thing, or is it just, like...
Do they even eat?
We had the smell thing that you know, from the super rig, so...
Anybody know a lot about neuroscience? About how sensing is affecting the brain? I do not know.
It seems complicated.
I think Amber is a neuroscientist.
Oh, yeah, sure. Massage neuroscientist. I think, this has nothing to do with that, but as far as taste goes, like, taste is strange, like... Has anybody else tried the miracle fruit?
No.
It's this fruit that you put in your mouth and you chew it, and then anything that you taste that's sour tastes sweet.
Ugh.
Nobody knows what I'm talking about. Like anything sour, like you eat a lemon and it just tastes like candy.
For how long?
It lasts for about an hour, I'd say.
Wow.
Are you talking about the Cinnaspalium dulcificum plant?
Fuck, I don't know. Am I?
I think you are. No, I just looked it up.
Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon. I mean, it's not... Me and the girlfriend tried it. It's interesting. Like, you can drink vinegar, and you can tell it's fucking vinegar because it burns, but it doesn't taste bad. Like, it tastes sweet.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Practically
it is, and it is. Well, I don't know if it's practically useless. Like, I try to think of ways that you could use it. Like, I didn't get this, but apparently if you drink a really stout beer, it tastes like chocolate milk. I didn't really get that, but... But I guess if you don't like stout beer and you want to like chocolate milk, maybe that's for you.
Yeah, if you want to look manly, but you don't like beer.
It's really weird, though. It's It's not a neuro thing, though. It, like, plugs your taste buds or something like that. It's weird.
But taste is much more smell is much more complicated than taste is. You can, like, smell like 10,000 different smells, but only, like, 4 or 5 different tastes. So it might, if they can get the smell down, maybe they can get the taste down.
Maybe.
Wait, you can only taste 5 different things?
Like, you know, sour, sweet, whatever.
And then just the combination is what creates the individual taste?
Yeah.
Right. It's like color. Yeah, there's only 3.
So, yeah, we did spend up a lot of time talking about the Oasis, but I think that's just reflects on the book, that it does generate a lot of conversation, even if it has its weaknesses.
Yeah, like, I have nothing to say, really, about the characters so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
they were very one-dimensional, and, you know, that's why I kept expecting them to have ulterior motives or to do something else and didn't, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, not every character has to be, you know, like a George R. R. Martin, you know, Jamie Lannister type journey. It doesn't have to happen, but it is refreshing when it does.
Yeah, I enjoyed the book, but I don't know how much power it has. Like, I might read it again sometime in the future. I mean, this is my second time reading it, so I guess I did read it again. But if it hadn't been for book club, I would have been like, oh, that was fun. I like that. Yeah. But I probably wouldn't read it again.
I thought it was super fun, but it's got problems for sure, and it's got a lot.
Yeah,
I'll take that as the subtitle for VOK Book Club. If it hadn't been for Book Club, that'll be tagline.
Or it's kind of fun, but it's got a lot of problems.
Yeah. it's definitely a fun journey. Like, I was just like racing through the last couple of chapters. It was definitely exciting and it held my attention. But yeah, there's not a whole lot to invest in the characters.
That'll wrap up the discussion proper. Thank you for joining us on the 4th Book Club. Please be sure to vote for the next one. We have had several people who are really pushing for certain books that have almost made it. So if you want to, American Gods or Cloud Atlas, or like, doesn't have to be a new book.
Or Station or China. What is it?
Pretty Street Station.
Back
the darkness that comes before.
Yeah, I want to.
I'm glad you're in my camp, Duncan.
Looks interesting, philosophical, and all that.
I'm up for whatever. I'm just happy that books that I'm interested in have won every single time. What a strange coincidence.
Oh, I wonder how that happened.
Well, considering only like 3 people vote for each one, I'm not cheating.
Greg is literally out of line.
Unless you're deleting the ones that aren't for yours.
Yeah, like I knew how to do that.
You have that power.
Just making a bunch of accounts to get those 5 votes.
All right, well, thank you, everyone. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. See ya.
Bye. Take care.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I wanna say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just wanna use your love tonight.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Australian. When Betamax and VHS were squaring off, Betamax was the obvious better.
VHS.
What?
We're laughing at your funny voice.
Ah, because I pronounced H properly, yeah.
We're the animals. Zed.
I'm cultured. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Australian.
I will say, listening to the audiobook, it was annoying every time the scoreboard came up because it'd be like Will Wheaton looking like IOI 7278, IOI.
Oh, really? It read them all out?
Yeah. It read them all out. Yeah.
That's great.
Ridiculous.
I would do the skip ahead, like 15 second jump whenever that came up.
Oh, really? I was just like, and go down around the page. Okay, here we go. Like, you knew it happened. I only need to know the top one.
Exactly, yeah.
Isn't the, I don't know why I thought this, but the symbol for the gate in the physical book, isn't that
it's like a Shinto shrine.
Yeah, it's a Shinto symbol, that religion. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that is, I don't know, maybe that's like the, whatever gates that Crown had access to put in as like clip art in the book.
I'll just use this fucking thing.
That one looks the coolest. Put it in.
Did you guys see that video I posted? Apparently, when the hardcover came out, he started a competition where there was like an Easter egg hidden in the book itself.
I tried to find.
Did anybody find it?
The letters. Someone solved it. They solved it in like 3 months, but it was a. But I didn't find the actual.
Oh, that's because that's how long the competition was going to take.
Right.
Did they get the DeLorean?
Yeah, they did. I watched the video when they gave it away. Awesome. The guy had to beat the final contest was that. Someone had to beat the established high score of like one of the games he picked, and he's like, I don't think anyone's gonna, but of course someone did it in like 8 days.
Yeah.
Someone beat the new high score.
He's like,
I think it was Joust, wasn't it?
I don't know. Joust. He's like, you need a perfect score in Pac-Man.
Yeah. Oh. I feel like if this was in the real world, like this contest would be done in like an hour and a half because of how fast people figure this stuff out normally. I don't know.
Yeah. I figured the contest, because he said it was, he couldn't do it in the in the ebook, it could only, because it was a text issue, that I assumed it was like the answer, you know, to Anorak's Almanac was that some letters had like a chip taken out of them. So I was trying to find, but I didn't come across any in my reading because you have to pay super close attention to that.
Yeah, apparently there's a couple of letters are slightly off, like bolded or something. Yeah. They spell a URL and you go to the URL and you play a game and it shows you where the next key is and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
I saw that in that video you posted. Like, I guess he was doing like book signings, and like every single one of the locations was like here. So I was like annoyed that it already happened, because like every single one of them was like in Colorado.
It really, like, whenever I see a competition like that, maybe it's my just like doubt in my own self confidence and stuff. But it's like, yeah, somebody else will do that way before I ever will, so I'm not gonna try.
Oh yeah, like I would. Yeah, like someone's
gonna. I would never try.
Oh no, that's like the one time I thought I was good at Halo, and I went to like an actual convention and played. Yeah, I was like, I got beat by like a 12-year-old kid. I was like, I'm gonna go back to my dorm room now.
Also had that experience, yeah.
Yeah, just for fun.
Some like 8-year-old European kid just annihilates me.
Just need
no,
to
but
check
this was in person.
There.
This was like actually at a.
Oh yeah, same thing for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Except the 8-year-old kid is like screaming obscenities at you.
Like, no, they don't do that in real life.
While his mother
they don't
was
do that in real life because you'd there'd be consequences.
Okay. Only yeah. Stand up.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Australian.
Well, it's like you have to buy the Telltale game for like $140, right, Greg? So.
2 hours doesn't seem worth
it. I'm a babe in the woods in the real world, so I'm learning of all this little by little. Yes.
That game looks great. I have to wait.
It's really fun. I'm really enjoying it.
It looks cool, like the story.
Me too.
Yeah, the characters.
Why are you saying it takes so long?
Duncan, why can't you play it?
Well, I'm just gonna wait till they're all out. I'm not gonna.
Oh, you don't want to go incrementally.
I'm of a similar mind, Duncan.
And yeah, I understand that. I wish I had waited, because now I'm like, when is the next one coming out already?
So I was the complete opposite. I played it and then just completely forgot about
it. Yeah, me too. I forgot.
People started posting. I was like, oh, I guess the episode's out again. I know originally we weren't going to review everyone, but if there's people that want to talk about it, I'll definitely.
Yeah, Shellfish put a call to arms up, and Shellfish is going to be on a podcast, guys.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
And I think he can edit it. If he offered that, then that means we don't have to edit it.
Nice.
Can't right. wait for him Anything to else? Describe the relationship between Roderick and Elena Glenmore.
I believe he has carnal desires for her.
That's exactly what he sounds like.
Shellfish impersonation.
I love you, Peter, just so you know. Don't be upset.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Australian.
Brett, you've listened to the audiobooks for The First Law, right?
Yeah, definitely. Love them.
Stephen Pacey? Okay, because your comment about not knowing how they're spelled, I thought, when I was listening, I thought Baez was spelled by ass. B-U-Y-S-S. So that comment really, I identified with that. I was so surprised.
When I was like trying to post Bias. Things on the forums about it, it was like, I had read the books a long time before I listened to them, and I'll never read them again because the listening is so awesome. Mm. But I forgot how things were spelled, like Ferromalgin. I was like, how the fuck do you even spell that? I had to like go back and look it up.
Well, I listened to the Ice and Fire books on audio first, so I never knew that it was, you know, like Sir with an E or all those Ys. I except for Petire, he always said Petire.
I always write
it wrong.
It was
wrong weird
anyway.
When the first time I saw them. Yeah.
And Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
Say Jeffrey.
He says Jeffrey.
He says Joffrey.
He says Jeffrey, unless he's
I'm
like saying
sure
it weird.
Says Joffrey.
Sometimes
he
changes.
He
like,
does sometimes say Joffrey, but then he sometimes says Jeffrey.
Well, he also Jeffrey. Says Targaryen, which is my big thing. I don't know why he says Targaryen.
When I was when I was listening to those. Dutrice, he changed the way he said them, but like, you know how he didn't do Feast for Crows, but he went back and did it later.
Yeah, I never listened to him redoing it. I have the John Lee version.
He well, changes from exactly. Petire, he goes to Peter eventually.
He changed a lot of the names he says in that one, and I don't know if he just forgot how he used to say them, but...
Well, he also, like, when he did dance, like, he just sounded, like, much older, and I know he had some sort of illness that I'm sure affected his voice or his range, maybe, because that's why Danny's, like, a pirate in the fifth book.
Well, yeah, his women are never good. All his women sound like toothless crones.
He had much more range. He had much more range in the first.
He remembered Reek, I think. He remembered Theon's voice, but it was cool though because Reek's voice actually changed, which like over the course of the novel, which is cool.
His Arya though, God.
And all the Iron Man are Australian, or Victorian is at least.
He does a great Grandmaster Pycelle though. He's got that down.
Victorian is totally Australian.
Wait, he does an old man well.
What a stretch!
He's just talking, man.
Oh, it's also uncanny. His voice sounds just like the alchemist from the show. It's weird.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
With that could have been him. I knew that. But didn't he actually try out for...
He did, but he was ill, I think, and that's why he didn't do it.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get into those audiobooks. Like, I kept trying, and it was tough. It's tough. But then once you get into him, you're like, okay, I can accept it. You stop hearing the voices and start just listening to what he's saying.
Well, I can accept it for some chapters, some like the Arya ones and like stuff. Like, it's just like, it's a struggle even still. Like,
it's like an old man doing a toothless crone's voice for a young girl.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's weird. I don't know. Danny kind of.
Yeah.
Some of his Danny stuff.
Danny too,
like,
yeah.
Why does she sound like this?
I'm only a young girl.
The ways of war.
And the sex scene with Fatire.
Oh, no, that is traumatic.
Yeah.
I actually thought about like trying to do like an interview with Roy Dotrice and like asking questions and having Game of Thrones responses to everything.
Would you just say, put a baby in me to everything?
I don't know what I would do. But I just, when I was listening to it, I thought there's like so much good content here. And you could just throw it in random questions.
That would be a hilarious episode, but it'd take a lot of work to pull all those clips.
Exactly why I haven't done it, because I'm lazy.
It'd be good for a fun pranks. It's like sampling gold.
Didn't they do
pranks.
That on the podcast of Ice and Fire, where they played clips and they had to guess who
the
character
that.
Was?
Yeah, that. But I would just like to like have an interview, pretend it's really him I'm talking to.
And
have him saying things from the books that make no sense or make him sound like a pervert.
It shouldn't be too hard, actually.
It's like, who's your favorite podcast host? Pataya! I think he just goes by Peter.
You should definitely do it. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Australian.
Sounds like we're about done here.